to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And I'm Nick Villingham.
Fantastic. Wow.
What a great opening.
Yes.
You guys should have done that all the time.
And we should have, shouldn't we?
That really was awesome. We're going to have the acoustic version.
Yes.
Somewhere.
Unplugged.
Yes.
Unplugged.
Yes.
Right,
coming soon. So this is kind of the Build hangover week. A lot of people have been describing it as.
All I've been doing is watching Build sessions in my free time.
Whilst hungover.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. How many have you watched so far? Are you serious?
10.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. You watched mine, I hope.
No, I haven't gotten 2 years.
I'm sure you're saving it for last.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. So we got a lot to talk about.
Let's jump right in.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's Build on Channel 9.
That's right. So over 200 sessions from last week available on Channel 9 right now. So if you go to channel9.com.
channel9.com/events/build.
Right above Nick's head.
Yeah, somewhere over there.
Yep. Tons of stuff on Windows 8.
Nick will be pantomiming everything we say today. Okay.
Lots of stuff about kind of next version of Visual Studio, independent of Windows 8. Although
sure.
Most of it's been Windows 8 content.
Windows 8, we got Azure, we got
Metro Style,
Visual Studio.
Yep.
Lots of good stuff. And you can always sort by tags, by term, and even by speaker as well.
That's right. And I've also noticed that if you play with the inline player by default for the build sessions, it's the HTML5 player. And so if you want to really see the screen, the easiest thing to do, I think, is download the high-quality WMV.
Or
switch your profile to Progressive, is it?
Yes. You can either switch your user profile,
yep.
Or if you're using Windows 8, because the version is available, there's a build app, I think, that's included in the build.
It was included in there,
and you can do the same thing, search and make everything touch-enabled, and actually watch sessions directly from there.
Oh,
now, you can't download them. If you need to download them, of course, follow the download links.
Yeah, sure.
And there's actually a Windows Phone app, isn't there? That we didn't build. Someone else, a partner, did it. But
Matthias, I think. There's a Channel 9...
I have one on my phone.
Niner.
Oh. Yeah.
It's the build app.
Okay.
Oh, yes, okay.
I don't know what it's called, though.
Yeah, cool.
It's just called Build Explorer.
Oh, that's
there
right.
You go.
Build Explorer, there you go.
Cool, right on.
Love it. Okay, so next thing is Channel 9 Events. You can build RSS feeds and then basically customize that feed in any single way. So a lot of people are familiar with the Channel 9 RSS feeds,
mm-hmm.
right? So we have RSS feeds for stuff. You can actually parameterize this. So you can do, say, for example, direction equals ascending, sort equals sequential, look for a specific term, and look for multiple terms, it looks like. So a lot of stuff, and then do that just for, say, I only want WMV highs, or I only want MP4 lows.
Have we always had this feature?
No, we haven't always had
had RSS, but not the customization, the ability to pass in those REST parameters.
Right. Is that something that Duncan and team have implemented for build?
I think at least part of this definitely existed before build.
Right.
But it's super useful.
Yeah.
And you can do it on I think, every RSS feed.
Cool.
Yeah, you should research.
What does REST stand for? I hear it all the time.
Representational and state transfer.
Yes. That
really?
Great.
Yes.
REST.
Yes.
Representational. That's the R E bit.
And exchange state.
Oh, exchange state transfer. Wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's the worst acronym.
Wow.
Yeah. It just basically.
This is what I do when you weren't here. It was me testing Brian on acronyms.
Like,
Brian, how do you say this guy's name? Brian, what is X and we X and XML? No, XML. Yeah, XML. We were struggling with that one.
Zap. X-A-P.
Oh, Zap. That was that's a, yeah, one. Zap. Yeah. That's right.
It's so good to hear back.
Extensible application.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, we're not sure.
We didn't get a definitive answer.
I think Zap has package.
Something
somewhere.
Package. Yeah. Packages and everything.
Moving right along. So dev.windows.com. So if you were at the Build conference, then you got a ton of bits on the tablet and on the USB key. But if you weren't there, all those bits are now available at dev.windows.com. So I've already downloaded the ISO for the Windows 8 developer preview, installed it on 3 or 4 of my machines, booting to VHD on every one of them. I think you've got it
There's
as well.
A Scott Hanselman article on it. Brian Peake actually helped set mine up. But Scott has a walkthrough of building a... Boot to VHD, so that way you can choose which one to do. And I was just showing the guys, even the menu for selecting is different now.
Yeah.
So it's definitely cool.
Yeah.
And I believe the Windows 7 USB tool, you know, the Microsoft Store released a tool to create a USB key for the Windows 7 ISO. It actually works with the Windows 8 ISO.
Yeah,
so
if
you want to make a USB boot key, you can just use that.
Yeah, but you need to have, if you get the one with the developer tools, you need to have a USB key that's greater than 4 gigabytes.
Right. Yeah, so you need 8 or something.
Yeah.
Do they do 6? They don't do 6. I think it's multiples.
Probably
not. Powers of 2.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
Awesome. Which brings us to the blog, the Building Windows 8 blog, which has an overview of the developer preview.
That's right. So Steven Sinofsky, you know, we've been talking about a lot of the things that he's been blogging at. His Building Windows 8 blog, which is blogsmsdn.com/b8, and then he has a post. That's right. He has a post dedicated to dedicated to just the developer preview, what to expect. You know, obviously there's it's a developer preview. It's not even a beta yet, so you do have to set your expectations right. But there's
a lot
of cool
stuff. Is it past alpha?
You know, we don't use the term alpha. I haven't seen anyone in the industry use alpha. It's such a long
time. It seems to be like CTP.
Yeah.
Right.
But we're not using CTP anymore. Now it's just developer preview.
It's definitely before beta.
For some things, there are CTPs. Like the Roslyn CTP is still called a CTP.
Yeah, there's some overpaid MBA sitting there somewhere coming up with these names.
And you know what? Yeah. CTP.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, this kind of goes through what you can expect and how to give feedback.
Cool. And on the tool side, Jason Zander actually has the Visual Studio 11 developer preview.
Yeah, so this one may be a little bit confusing to people, because if you go out and you download the Windows 8 with developer tools, you get a version of Visual Studio. But that version of Visual Studio is Visual Studio Express for Windows, and it only supports Metro-style applications.
Correct.
Which has caused a lot of people to think, oh gosh, Microsoft's abandoning Foo if it can't be built with.
When you say that, you mean it's a version for creating Metro-style apps.
Correct.
Not it only works in the Metro-style interface.
Visual Studio itself works in desktop mode.
Okay, yeah. But that version that's built into that build is specifically for making Metro-style apps.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's the version that ships on the ISO. However, you can go out and download the Visual Studio Ultimate 11, Visual Studio 11 Ultimate developer preview, and then that unlocks all the other project types and
Visual Studio
languages
goes
and things.
To left.
That's right. That's right. No one's made that joke yet.
Okay, good. Yeah. Got it.
And
first
one
in.
And so, and that's what you can actually install the two side by side and work with those on the Windows 8 image or on your Windows 7 or Windows.
And will eventually, will they become one?
No,
will,
they're going to be.
They'll always be two separate experiences.
Well, we're not talking a lot about the SKUs right now.
Right.
Usually, those things get locked closer to RTM. But yes, for these two specifically, they are separate.
So you can actually have, and this is, you know, if you want to go to what level of weirdness, you can install Visual Studio 11 Express, Visual Studio 11 Ultimate, Visual Studio 2010. Ultimate, and then each version of Visual Studio 2010 Express, all on the same machine,
yeah,
and they all work side by side.
Yep. And how would you choose one over the other? Now, for the Dev 11 stuff, obviously, there's one path for a Metro-style app, and another path for a non-Metro-style app.
Right.
Is that right?
That's right.
But then why would you be going back to 2010? Obviously, it's RTM. It's the more stable bits, but is that the only
reason?
There's
a few edge cases where, the more stable bits, I mean, that's the only supported version right now. There's some add-ins and plugins, of course, that you may be using that only are supportive of Visual Studio 2010. So there's a number of reasons. However, one of the reasons that people used to have in the past for having all these different versions of Visual Studio was the fact that the projects, once you upgraded them from like 2008 to 2010, that was one way. So if we were all going to use if one of us wanted to use 2010, all of us pretty much had to use 2010.
Kind of like a Word document. When you upgrade a Word document, it would be for that upgraded version.
Okay.
But you didn't, like with Word, you had an option to save in the historical file formats.
Yep.
With Visual Studio 2010, you didn't have that option. Now, with Visual Studio 11, they actually have really great project compatibility back and forth. I can open it up in 11, save it. You guys can open it up in 10. Everybody's happy.
Right.
So it's really cool there.
Cool.
And there's some things for Windows Phone tooling that you do need the 2010
Right, like the Windows Phone tools, the Azure SDK, they don't yet work with Visual Studio 11. So it's all kind of a phased migration, I would say.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Another point that I want to make, I talked to a customer yesterday, they were confused. They thought that Visual Studio Ultimate was going to be required in order to build, say, a WPF application. Obviously, Visual Studio Ultimate is the only is one of two SKUs we're talking about. At launch, of course, there will be lots of other SKUs, so you can imagine we might have more Express SKUs and other things. We can't talk about those yet. But I just want to put some minds at ease that you don't have to have Ultimate for everything. That's just what we have in the developer preview right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
And speaking of different parts, this is actually, now, because all these apps are side-by-side...
Speaking of different parts, that's your segue?
Speaking of apps, because we isolate them, right?
Yes.
Because we isolate them, they each have their own registry key. So if you look very closely, we're looking at the registry hive of a machine, Software Microsoft, VS Win Express, the 11 version. You can actually have the online base URL value for that help key. You can point the documentation, because it does not ship with this. You can actually point to the online documentation and do that. Now, you do need to do that on a per SKU basis, right? So, like, if you need to do it for VS Win Express and, say, VS 11, and you could probably even do it for VS 10 if you really wanted to show Dev 11 help files for version 10. But the point is, you can actually get pretty nice help support.
Yep.
Directly in VS 11.
Yep, exactly. And so that wasn't quite ready when the bits were finalized and made available last week, but here you can do this registry hack.
Yeah, and they got a ton of documentation on there, too.
Yeah.
So good stuff to play with.
And speaking of documentation, here's an article that's starting to go into the low-level particulars on what's new in the .NET Framework 4.5. So lots of good stuff when it comes to WPF, WCF, Windows Workflow, some of the low-level networking support, you know, a lot of that stuff, a lot of the nitty-gritty things that we've all come to rely on in our .NET applications, especially you, Nick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I'm still working on my phone map.
I know. You're.
It's coming along.
I'm sure it is. Yeah.
Hey, I think there's a Visual C# book I gave you, a step-by-step book.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, I read that. It was great.
Yeah, good.
Nick, for those of you that are just joining us in the Nick series, Nick is not a developer. He's the furthest from a developer.
Yes.
But he likes to...
I'm a bricklayer. I'm a bricklayer.
Furthest from a developer, really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think that's...
No, you can't get further than me. It's very true.
Moving
right
along.
Is there background pink? This is awkward.
So this is XAML Finance. So what I liked about this application, it was out on the code project. What I liked about it is the approach to really say, hey, you know, we've got a lot of similar programming models, I would say, when you start looking at WPF, Silverlight, and Windows Phone 7. And so this article really breaks down how you would construct an application so that it can start to use similar business logic and presentation logic across those three different target platforms.
Yeah, I mean, that is probably the biggest thing. It's like, wow, I want to build an application that can run on all these different things. There are some things that you shouldn't know, and we do have some tools for portable libraries. Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff for people building an application. Here's good guidance for what can be reused and what are some of the gotchas.
Right, and I'm looking forward to the Metro-style version of this as well. That'd be a nice addition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But Brian Keller, shouldn't they be using F#?
Oh, well, I mean, they should be.
Shouldn't they be using
this? Is really
more of it.
But finance, we've been talking a lot about F#. And when to use.
That's a good point.
When to use
it. Look at you. See,
you're no longer furthest from a developer.
No, I'm one step up from bricklayer. Ooh, excuse me.
Nick's been drinking since noon. So.
Yes. This is wood alcohol.
MoXAML. MoXAML.
Oh, moving right along. MoXAML Power Toys. So one, the tools have been open source, and a lot of people are familiar with it.
We're going to sneak peek at the next slide.
Oh, my God!
Everyone pause and go forward.
No! Don't do it. It includes a bunch of tools. One is called Scrubber, which is Robbie Ingebretson's KaXAML tool has it. It's, you write, you know, a bunch of markup stuff, and it's kind of, you know, all over the places. There's tabs, there's spaces. Mm-hmm. It's not structured. You basically take it and it indents everything correctly. It puts your all the different properties in a special way. You can make sure the bracing is right and everything in between.
So it would be like taking a wheelbarrow full of bricks and then actually like building a nice wall out of them, to use an analogy that Nick might appreciate. Yeah.
Or it'd be lining up all my red bricks and blue bricks with the correct indentation.
Yes. Exactly. So it would be that sort of visual organization.
That doesn't happen automatically? That's kind of not a tool, it's already built in?
No, because it's the person's writing it, right?
Sure.
So if it's code built, it's somewhat organized.
But can't you see, like in XAML, where you kind of open the parameter and then close it, and you should know that those two should be in line?
Yeah, but for example, like this, I believe it has the ability to do like alphabetic ordering. So it's like, hey, I'm looking for the width or the height. And, you know, you have a bunch of stuff.
Oh, wow, and it'll go and make sure they're all in the correct order.
Yeah, it just basically cleans it up for you.
That's cool.
Which I think is
nice. I like that.
Another one, which is a demo Anders actually showed in his C-sharp talk for Build, which is an absolute positive must-see. Mm-hmm. It's just so awesome. He shows how to use the Roslyn tools to build something that's actually in MoxAML, which is to build an iNotified property exchange, where I have a variable. I want to be able to listen. If that property changes, tell me, so I can say, you know, the price just changed, the quantity just changed to zero or something. But he shows how to build a dev tool that does it just what this does, which is to build a dev tool that does it.
At debug time, you mean?
No, while you're writing code.
Oh, okay.
While you're writing code, because it basically does a bunch of code spit, except it's a template for it. So to implement iNotified properties change, you have to have this thing, implement this property, blah, blah, blah. It's really tedious for a developer to have to write, you know, I guess it's like 10, 15 lines for every property that you want to be notified when it's changed. Mm-hmm. So rather than having to do 10 to 15 lines, right here, it's just a right-click option. So if you can see that in the corner, it's just right-click. You have a property, hey, go ahead and do this. It spits out the code for you, so you don't have to do it. And that's what Anders showed, is that you can also do that using the Roslyn tools.
Got it. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about Roslyn in the future.
Oh my, yes.
What's Roslyn?
So Roslyn is the ability for...
Just between...
All the stuff in that C-sharp does, uh-huh. The compiler and the tools, is now available as a service.
Hmm.
So, let me give you just one crazy example that they did, which
Please use bricks in your example.
They actually had some code, highlighted it, and it's like, change it to Visual Basic.
Okay.
Because they semantically understand what's going on in the code. So it's, hey, I have this application here, and, it's a Twitter feed application, automatically changes the code between, it does the exact same functions.
Wow.
And they can change it back and forth as well.
Like if you were building a brick house and you decide you want to make a titanium house.
Imagine you get your instructions in Spanish but just and you want them in Australian.
Can you just say just this window? I want this window to be, or this. I want this block here to be a different material. And is it the whole project
it's
or just a part
language.
Of it?
Yeah, so you can choose.
Wow.
So yeah, so it's pretty awesome.
How is that? That's very interesting. But how does it help me? Why would I use that?
So let's say you only knew one language.
Okay.
You only know English,
I only know
right?
Australian.
And you only know Australian English, yes. Right? And you have directions in German.
Okay.
Right? It's like, wow, I don't understand that. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just translate it into English?
But the other thing that
and
I think...
it's code that works.
The other thing I think is really cool, too, is that the tools vendors, like somebody that plugs into Visual Studio and maybe does component vendors, they now can just focus on making those tools available in a single language, and then now everybody gets it. If they're using Visual Basic, C#, J#, whatever,
absolutely.
It just lights up.
Colorization, bracing, all the other stuff that the tool does for you. Is built on top of those services.
But now we're getting way into the future. Here.
Into the future. So,
speaking of future, what's the next slide? Knowing your place in life. Yeah, so this is all about like image placeholders, so that as your application is loading in the background, whether it's a WPF, Silverlight, Windows Phone application, you don't have blank spot of your application, you can actually
have this weird thing that may be there. Yeah,
exactly. So I think this is really cool.
So while the images is waiting to download, mm-hmm. it has that placeholder, the image hits there, and boom, it updates.
Exactly.
Probably using iNotify property changed.
Probably, yeah.
Boom. Hey, something changed. Update the image.
Yeah.
Boom.
So boom.
David Anson, great article.
Yeah. Boom. Boom.
Goes the dynamite. So Sync Framework Toolkit.
Yes.
So Sync Framework Toolkit, you want to give us the quick background on this, first of all, what it is.
It basically allows you to synchronize data across different data stores, different clients.
And,
I think I have offline support
as well
with inventory and stuff. Yes.
Okay.
So, and I think that's one of the big things that they're looking to build out is not just offline for Microsoft platforms, but for different platforms as well.
Right. So the key thing with this announcement here is that they're making it available under an open source license, which allows people to go out and take the Sync framework and make it available for other platforms, Android, iOS, what have you.
Right. So the idea is, say if you're working with somebody that doesn't always have an internet connection, they're like salespeople. Mm-hmm. They're selling stuff in inventory. Everybody has a different copy of the database, and we need to synchronize those, get the insertions and removals, and basically the sync framework does all that stuff.
Exactly. Cool. Code Ninja Spy.
So I love this because it's it basically is listening for shortcuts. And I think the example is, the idea is, I do this a lot, which is do shortcuts. In fact, we had a dedicated session on Channel 9 Live where we started talking about Visual Studio tips and tricks, and there is a session.
And Phil. Mm-hmm. Price.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yes, we will get there. I didn't want to rattle. But, yes.
Too late for that, man.
It was an awesome session. People were Twittering and asking for keyboard shortcuts, and I was trying to get them on the spot and hopefully get ones they didn't know. So what this tool does is while you're actually using Visual Studio, you can see the command line. So imagine next time you're giving a session, you start doing Control-KC or Control-KU. Everybody knows that as the ability to comment and uncomment codes. You don't know what's going on, like how's he doing that or what's he actually doing.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see that.
That's cool. And I think if I was doing that, I would have to program some like really complicated one that like mapped back to the to one of the Doom cheat codes or something. So I'm like Control K I D S P I S
I D D Q F A.
Yeah, exactly. And then it just like does something crazy.
So hang on, so this is kind of like closed captioning for when you code.
Yes.
It's a great example.
Yeah.
But specifically it's looking for shortcuts.
Right. Okay. Right.
So, because if you do it, I mean, if you're one of these people that does like a Ustream of your coding, I'm going to do live coding.
Yeah.
People don't get to see your shortcuts, but they see you typing. So this just adds that.
Yeah. Especially for resharper people that are, you know, they use the term ninjas, but you basically see them and all they're doing is keyboard shortcuts
and paired programming as well. So like if you were both hanging out and I'm trying to learn from you.
Yeah. Yeah. So cool stuff.
Yep.
So this is more like a recap post on favorite tools to optimize Visual Studio 2010 for web development. So it goes through a bunch of free downloads that you can install. Web Standards Update for Microsoft Visual Studio 2010 SP1. That allows for IntelliSense for HTML, CSS3,
yep.
Some JavaScript stuff as well. So improve JavaScript IntelliSense. Some other things that are in there, one of them is probably one of my favorites, which is the image optimizer. So imagine you're in Visual Studio, you have a folder of images, right click, and you can basically run the image optimizer on everything in there. So, and that will crunch between, you know, 13 and 70% size reduction.
13 and 70.
Like massive range. It really depends on your
images. That sounded believable when you like...
But not 12. Yeah, if you want 12%, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's 13. It's actually 12.99 repeating.
Definitely right. 13.
But yeah. I didn't want to sound like an idiot. So I just said...
No, you didn't at all. Don't worry.
I didn't. I was really worried I'd sound like an idiot. And there's a lot of other cool JavaScript tools, last for packaging, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But definitely check out the list.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people may not realize, obviously, the web is evolving much faster than we release versions of Visual Studio, but the ASP.NET and other teams are really keeping up with that pace. You just have to be aware of what's out there so you know how to go grab it and keep your Visual Studio up to snuff, so to speak.
Oh.
Yeah.
So to speak.
So to speak.
So what, Brian, is a Think Test Dummy SMTP server?
Yeah, so this is a basically...
Brian, what does SMTP stand for?
Simple Mail Transport Protocol.
Correct.
I know that one. And I'm guessing for dev means for developers. So this is just a lightweight SMTP server that you can set up and runs on your system, and you can basically send mails to it. It'll listen for SMTP traffic. You can receive mails from it, but it doesn't actually do anything with the mail, which is kind of what happens when you send Dan a mail. It just goes into this black box.
Or receive one from you as well. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure you guys have rules and alerts to ignore my email.
Definitely. And this is just a nice lightweight client if you're looking for one. I've tried looking for SMTP clients in the past or servers in the past, and it's not always easy. So
and looks like Rob at rnwood.co.uk. Was he the author?
Sure. Yeah.
He is now.
Yeah, he is.
Well done,
congratulations, Rob.
Outstanding.
Yep. Windows Azure Platform PowerShell Commandlets V2. Now, the first version of these has actually been really popular. I know a lot of people that, rather than have to drop into the Windows Azure portal every time to make changes, update their deployments, take things offline, just switch things around, they're now using the PowerShell Commandlets. So it's nice to see that they're investing in these further to just continue to push
those
out.
What does CMDLETS stand for, Brian?
Commandlets?
Yeah.
Wait, that's an acronym. What does it stand for?
I think it's an acronym.
I'm pretty sure it's an acronym.
It's a seven-word acronym.
Text messaging speak for command. Oh, it's I'll get back to you on that one. I don't know.
Fail,
yeah, sorry.
All right, next slide.
Yep.
Oh, I did it again!
Fail.
This is the most unorganized. Okay, so Windows Phone apps, it's a free WP7 book. So this is, you know, we always have to highlight free ebooks, but the idea is this is really about building Windows Phone applications, and it goes through, and you know, friends of the show, Mike Orman, and some other folks, and
like
really,
12 other folks, like a whole like gaggle of people participated in this.
Yeah, so you know, you want things like tools, controls, everything's in there. So, and really, you know, people are looking for free ebooks to build.
Yes.
What was your?
I'm doing a Windows Phone 7 app that has map controls to allow me to geolocate earthquakes.
Yes, That's not bad.
I'm pretty sure somebody built an app that will build that for you. It's like Mad Libs. Yes. I am building a blank that has blank maps.
And it's called Phone Map Earthquake.
.net.
3.5.
Right.
At least we make ourselves laugh.
Yes. Because of hash generator.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
You need to explain this to me. Hash generator?
Yeah. Do you? So, do you know what a hash code is?
To basically test the integrity, of course. Yeah, is that what this is?
Exactly. So, okay. Like a common one is a CRC or MD5, yes. Yep. Right? And the idea is that it's kind of a shorthand for comparing files because the chances of two files having the exact same hashtag are like one in, you know, some really, really big number.
One in a Brazilian.
Exactly. So rather than actually compare line by line on our two files and have to exchange those over the wire, you can say, hey, here's the hash. And you can pretty well say with, you know, 5 to 10 nines certainty that if you match the hashes, then you have the exact same file.
Sure.
But the problem is that Windows doesn't have built-in hash generator, so you always have to go get a third-party tool, and you don't know which, like, 2 out of the 15 different hash codes are going to be supported by that tool.
And the tools are really difficult to use. I think that's the coolest part about this is you just right-click on a file, and you can see that hash generator there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then what does it output?
It outputs the hash, so it's going to tell you, like, based on which hash you're interested in.
Yeah, but, like, will it create a little text file that has the hash in it, or, like, is
document.
Yep.
There you go.
So you can output it.
Yep. How about that?
Yeah.
Actually, no. You're looking at that's the folder behind the folder.
Oh, you're right. I
think it just throws it up on the screen. I'm sure you can do something else.
And then you have to write it down on a napkin, and then you put it in an envelope, and you go to the post office, and you send it to the person that you sent your file to.
Well, no, you send it. You give it to the post office, and they then print it out, and then they tie it to a little carrier pigeon.
Carrier pigeon
takes it across.
Hey, you know what we talked about in a previous show about?
You
said your avian transfer protocols.
That's right.
So I found out the other day that there is a legitimate theoretical data transfer limit, which is filling a Boeing 747 full of Blu-ray discs. And you think about like a Blu-ray, is it 30 gigs per Blu-ray disc? Whatever a Blu-ray disc is, they've worked out what the cargo capacity is of a 747 and how many Blu-ray discs could fit into that and therefore how much data could fit into a 747.
Wow.
And then the ability to send that 747 from Los Angeles to New York is the, oh gosh, what is it? Anyway, it's some benchmark that they use to try and work out like when they've reached, you know, I don't know.
But wouldn't like a micro USB or like hard drives be able to store more than a Blu-ray disc?
I don't know. I don't know if Blu-ray has pound for pound or you know square inch for square inch.
Yeah, I'm just thinking with like maybe
because the disc you can just endlessly stack them. They don't really need to be in cases or anything. But if it's not 30, it's more than that.
Yeah,
it's
like 80
gigs. But even hard drives or like flash drives or something.
But you could, I see what you're saying. You could like slide them into the backs of the seats. And
no, clear out no seats. Yeah.
No, we're talking like a FedEx cargo 747,
yeah.
And it's like every available piece of space is a completely full Blu-ray. Maybe it's like dual layer, double side. It's like 90
maybe
gigs.
Maybe there's something weird about it.
I don't know what it is. Anyway, there's something. It's on Wikipedia. I don't know how you found it.
Yeah, and if you're still watching the show at this point, we apologize. Yeah.
Sorry for rat-holing there.
Picks of the week. So my pick of the week, this is one of my egocentric...
Oh, surprise, surprise.
Shocker.
Oh, wow.
So
Brian Kaler, who's that?
Yeah, these people, you can never pronounce their
names. Brian...
Friend of the show. Anyway,
Florida?
You guys don't have to like it.
Oh, it's like in Spanish where two L's is a Y. It's Kayer. Brian Kayer.
Oh yeah, gracias.
Yeah.
So
what?
So, yeah. So you can. You can.
Have you been condescending? I couldn't work.
I don't even know. Yeah. I don't even know.
Let's get to it. Get to it. Go. Boom.
I built a Hyper-V virtual machine that you can use to download with Visual Studio 11 Ultimate, Team Foundation Server 11, developer previews. It has sample data, sample teams. You can go through 6 hands-on labs and really get a hands-on sense for some of the things we're doing in 11, such as storyboarding. We have storyboarding in PowerPoint. Allows you to quickly mock up your UIs. Really cool.
Very cool.
It sounds one of those things that, like, hey, it's just PowerPoint. But actually, when you start using this tool, you'll see
PowerPoint
it's really cool.
Person, it's
pretty
awesome.
Powerful.
Exactly. And then we've got a bunch of really nice tools for doing agile project management, unit testing. We now support in-unit and X-unit as well as MS test. So
love
lots of stuff in here. Love for
this
you to take a look.
Dedicated session, Peter Provost, on unit testing.
Yeah, we had about half dozen ALM topics last week. So. Anyway, it's not Windows 8. It's not the sexiest out there, but it's useful.
And Channel 9 Live.
Channel
9
Live.
Found.
Yes.
So what sessions are available now?
So our day one, which was actually the second day of the conference, which I believe is Wednesday. So I've got all of that is up on Channel 9 Live. On Channel 9 Events on Demand right now. So that's all the way from we kicked off with Stephen Tobe. Then we had Soma, Scott Guthrie, Mark Sinovich, Mark Neal, Jason Zander.
Dan Fernandez. I mean, it was all the big shots.
Yeah.
Lori Lampkin.
Yeah, like Doug Newman.
Yep.
I think Christian Shulman was at the end. So it was a great day. We had a ton of viewers. I mean, Bill was just crazy in terms of, you know, the amount of attention on there. But that day is all up available on demand. You can download that. You probably use the custom RSS feed to create your own little Channel 9 Live on demand, high definition stuff. Day three of the conference, which was Thursday, we're currently in the process of converting. That's a bit clunky the way we do it. We need to kind of streamline it a bit better. But that should be hopefully up in the next kind of day or two.
Okay,
awesome.
Sweet.
Same.
And, you know, we gotta say that this is actually your last week on Channel 9 because you are leaving to the Hotmail team. And you just did your interview with Charles.
My exit interview with Charles, yeah. Yeah, I had to explain to him that I was going to a team inside Microsoft that makes a product called Hotmail. He thought I was joining a male dancing troupe, which
Mail.
Was a little awkward for a few minutes.
Well, he's been to Vegas, and there's Thunder Down Under posters
there. There is. Yeah, I had to knock them back. They contact me basically every month on LinkedIn. so I'm going to the Hotmail team. So I would love to still be on Channel 9 and kind of come see you guys and do videos and stuff, and maybe I could guest host the odd this week on Channel 9 when Dan's in a coma somewhere and...
Typical.
It happens. Yeah.
But this is my last Channel 9 Live.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Yeah, and Channel 9 Live, I think, you know, I don't know how many people know the backstory of Channel 9 Live, but...
We did talk about it at length in the exit interview, so if people wanted to watch that.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
But we can talk about it now. If you want
I remember when we first started talking about
it. Is that my chair making this weird squeaking noise?
Probably.
I think it's me. It sounds like there's like a grandmother knitting in a corner somewhere.
Oh, no, actually, Grandma, hi. Yeah.
Grandma 90.
Yeah, exactly.
She's going to kill you.
When we first started talking about this, everyone was like, what are you, crazy? Like, the idea
of doing live
interviews at a conference, you don't know what bandwidth is going to happen.
Exactly.
But bandwidth has always
been
on your side.
7 hours of live
Actually,
video.
I think the first day was 8 hours. I think we did 8.5 hours the very first day. We've never done it before. Never. Not once.
When was the first Channel 9 Live?
PDC 09.
PDC 09.
Yes.
So that's cool.
PDC 09. Ray Ozzie was our first guest.
Oh, wow.
Or second guest? I think Bob Moo.
Was there in the day. Bob Moo was there in the day.
Bob Moo, Ray Ozzie. Anyway. It was
Scott Goo.
Scott Goo. The Goo has been on, I think, almost every single Channel 9 Live.
Yeah. Nice.
He really has. We need to give him some kind of trophy.
Why don't we give him, like, if you've done 10, you get a, I don't know, like a super
A crystal.
Yeah.
Some kind of large crystal.
You get Denny's Grand Slam or something.
No, MVP card or something, like, oh, Scott's here. And he scans his card.
But I saw ZPV was, he was very happy that one of his questions got asked, I think during the Mark Neal session. I think he felt a bit left out that we hadn't asked his questions from previous Channel 9 Live. So, hello, ZPV, and I'm very happy we got to your question.
Yeah.
And, of course, Al keeps us afloat. When
there's something weird, I think it's like
about Al.
No, that the fact that we don't always see all the questions.
No, we don't.
Until after the
session. Well, so a couple things happen.
But Al's always come through.
Yeah, we do a couple things.
I don't know how much he pays the Twitter folks, but like in a search term, it's always his.
You're right. So at Build, Twitter, we got blacklisted. Is that what you call it?
Wow.
The IP range, the public IP range for all the internet connections of Build, we were hammering Twitter so hard from all the attendees plus us that Twitter actually just, you know, blacklisted
us
for about 4 hours. So wow. The only way we were getting Twitter questions in was on our Windows Phone 7 phones. Larry had like 4 Windows Phone 7 phones just stacked up in front of him, and he's kind of cycling through them, looking at different search terms,
That's
trying to
awesome.
Find questions. So we were very light on questions for quite a bit because we just couldn't find them.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you're right. And then sometimes we get inundated because, you know, obviously BuildWin was a pretty popular hashtag, so it's quite difficult to kind of sort through all the incoming tweets.
Alec Baldwin.
It was Adam Baldwin. Actually, it was trying to get Firefly back on the air, and everyone's like, "We want Jane."
Oh, I love Firefly.
Did you see all the speculation Monday night right before the Build keynote about P-Link? About P-Link, did you see this?
Oh yes, I did. This was hilarious.
Dan has a Build logo here on the screen. If you look at that Build logo now, if you take your laptop or whatever display device you're watching that on and flip it upside down,
yes,
which I'm going to do right now.
Yeah. So,
get it? Probably, can you see it?
No, you're going to need to face the camera.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is. Yeah. There you go. You can probably make it out.
You see it? It says
P-Link.
P-L-I-N-Q.
Let's get it closer.
Yeah.
So.
And P-Link.
Then, of course, the Windows parts spells
Smopium.
Smopium.
Smopium. Right.
Guys, I think we're running out of space on our CDN.
Yeah.
I think we need to cut this short. Nick, best of luck on Hotmail.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Love you. Yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
We'll miss you,
Charles.
Terribly.
See you around. And you need to take us out with some music.
Yes.
Brian Keller, by the way.
Oh, did I just say Charles?
Yeah, you did. It's all right.
It's okay. All right.
Dude, I'm so sorry.
This is the first time you guys have met.
Yeah. So. Let's do this again. Charles.
Yeah. No, dude.
Brian.
Blair.
Oh. Am I playing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shut up.